people here that I'm with at the Martin Luther King Center. A great act of solidarity. We brought many bushels of medical aid, and it's getting very high attention because people are thrilled that the caravan is here.
Beautiful. How do people get more information? Because I have 15 seconds if they want to sort of check it out.
Okay.
No more.
I want to recommend that people can contact answercoalition.org, and you can get some information what's been happening and the protests. We had a great protest in San Francisco for Cuba yesterday.
Okay, come back and talk to us. We're out of time. Gloria Larive in Havana, thank you. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Stay tuned.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience. KBOO, Portland.
Lie down all in the ground, I'd root that mountain down, and I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Tune in to KBOO Monday mornings at 9 for the Old Mole Variety Hour, your source for radically democratic news, views, reviews, and interviews. Stories of ordinary and extraordinary people working to root down the oppressive institutions of capitalism. That's the Old Mole Variety Hour, Monday mornings at 9.
Times Like Now is an interview program. Interviews with interesting people that are doing cool stuff. I'm Trevor Collins. Seattle in the early 1990s was the center of everything cool, the hub of music, fashion, art, and culture. My guest, Karen Mason Blair, she witnessed the scene from behind the lens of her camera as the photographer on this episode of Times Like Now. Hi there, Karen. Thank you so much for your time and for joining me on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So let's jump right into your years in there once was a big town called Seattle, Washington. And you were right there with a camera in your hand when, let's say, a pop culture explosion happened right there, and you were at the ground zero of it. And you just happened to have a camera in your hand. So what we're talking about is what they called the Seattle music sound, the scene, the grunge of the late 80s. How did you get involved, and where were you at that time in that place?
Yeah, well, I still consider myself a fangirl with a camera. Like, I always follow the music. Like, when I hear a song or a band, I'm like, oh my gosh, I love them, and I want to take their pictures. And so, it was like the, you know, early 90s, and all these bands were playing. Like, can you imagine driving down the street to your local bar? And you drive in and you park and you're like, oh, there's Nirvana. And then the next week you drive to this bar or this, you know, club, and the next week it's Alice in Chains. And then the next week it's Soundgarden. And then one week I'm standing next to Alice in Chains in the crowd. And the next week Alice in Chains is on stage, and now I'm standing next to Soundgarden. And that's why, I mean, the whole grunge movement to me is really love and support. That we were all loving each other and supporting each other. And I like to say that the grunge movement really was like 300 to 500 people. I mean, it wasn't that big, but what's mind-blowing is you can have 300 people on any project today, but the depth of talent that was in that 300 people, that's what changed the world. We're talking the Dave Grohl's, we're talking the Kurt Cobain's, we're talking the Eddie Vedder's, the Chris Cornell's, you know, and then I'm there taking their pictures. And it's just insane. And then we go to this one guy, he does the t-shirts, and we go to this one, you know, this person, oh, she books the bands, oh, she manages the bands, oh, he makes the posters, oh, Karen takes the pictures. And it's literally that kind of familia. And still to this day, I say that they're my Seattle music family. My familia, and we all remember those 300 people. Yeah,
sure. And I was in Portland at the time, where I'm from, and was in those early 90 years, I was working in radio and was coming out up to Seattle to see shows. Granted, a lot of what I was doing was in Portland, but a lot of these bands were coming down to Portland because at the time there was more clubs in Portland to play at than there were in Seattle at the time down that I-5 corridor. So I saw a lot of those shows in Portland. But the, like you said, the depth of talent that was coming out of there was like someone turned on the tap and it just flooded the world eventually. But yes, you said a very organic small scene that grew kind of gradually over time. I remember going up in the late 80s early 90s. And when did you pick up a camera? How did you get into photography before this time? Where did you go to school?
Yeah, so really, I was managing a band in high school, if you can believe it. And they needed photos. And so I started calling all these photographers to take their photo. And it was so expensive. And I said, you know what, guys? I'm just going to buy a camera. I'm for that amount of money, I'm going to buy a camera and take your pictures. And they said, okay. And, you know, I was in the yearbook class and I loved photography. And I was like, why not? So I bought a camera. I took these pictures and they're like, these are amazing. And I'm like, oh, you're just saying that because they're almost free. And they're like, no, these are really good. And so I started to look around. And I was like, well, maybe I'm onto something. And so I took my first roll of black and white film in the yearbook class in high school and in Edmonds, Washington. And then I ended up going to Seattle Central Community College and got my commercial photography degree. And upon getting my degree, I loaded up a moving truck and I moved to Hollywood, California. And I got a studio in Hollywood and I started taking these pictures. And I did the pictures for Faith No More's album, The Real Thing, if you can believe it. And I said, oh, I can't take pictures until I hear the music. And they said, well, great. Faith No More is recording this new album. So drive down the street. So I went to the studio and I hung out with Faith No More for 3 days. And I was like, holy shit. And then I did their photos. I did their promo photos, you know, for the album, The Real Thing.
I do know that album. I do know those photos. Absolutely. I was a big fan of that and of course all the Seattle bands as well, which brings me back to Seattle. So when did you come back?
Yeah. And why? So I only stayed in Hollywood for like a year, almost a full year. And I just couldn't really dig on the Hollywood thing because I would show up and there'd be like literally 20 photographers in the pit. And I'm like, oh my God. And then these people never move. They like just, you know, they just like, oh, I'm going to stand here the entire concert. And I was like, you know what? I won't even be able to sell a single photo because I can't get the image. And so, I mean, luckily for me, like, I mean, I went to this Megadeth concert in Long Beach and I'm like, what is going on? And these people, oh my God. Well, I'm the only woman in the pit, just so you know. Okay. And then I'm like, what the fuck? Like, they're not going to move. And I'm like, okay, well, you're just going to, you know, post up and be that guy. So I was like, whatever. So here comes Dave Mustaine, comes out. And and Dave Mustaine and I are friends, right? Because I was all friends with Metallica. And so Dave Mustaine sees me. And I am so far. I am like 20 people over from Dave Mustaine. And he sees me, so he comes walking over and he stands right in front of me and just plays his guitar. Thank God. And so I get these great photos. And then by the time these other people try to come over, he's like, nope, that was for Karen. And he moves to back to center stage. And I was like, you know what? I can't do this. Like, not everybody knows Karen and loves me and whatever. Like, this isn't going to work. So then I moved back to Seattle, which was crazy. So now I'm back in Seattle.
Approximately what year was that?
Yeah, so I'm back in Seattle, and this is like, let me think, hold on. This is like 80, 89.
Well, after, so yeah, it would have been 89 or 90 after...
Because I only lived there for 1 year. So I moved down like in 88. Guns N' Roses is blowing up. I did all the hair bands, Great White, all that. So then I come back, and then all of a sudden, Karen, we just got signed to our photos. Karen, we just got signed to our photos. And so I was already friends with everybody. And then they all get signed, and then they all want me to do their photos. And then the crazy thing is because I was in LA for a year, that I had all these LA connections. And then so Rolling Stone's like, you're the only photographer we know in Seattle. Oh, People Magazine, you're the only photographer we know, because I met them in LA. And so then that was like very advantageous. And it was just seemed to be like the right place, the right time. And I mean, Jerry Cantrell from Alice in Chains used to sleep on my couch. You know, I mean, we were all friends. And then so, and what was really crazy is like in the 80s, the bands, oh, we're going to do our hair, we're going to put makeup on, you know. And in the 90s, they were just all like, hey, I hate photos. And I'm like, yeah. Yeah, I know you guys hate photos, but you don't hate me. And so that's why I got the most, you know, gorgeous photos of these most beautiful people. And they hated photos, but we all got along. And so in my photos, you see them smiling or being more authentic because I knew them before I took their photos. And then when I took their photos, I was like, what? Come on. Come on, Kurt. You can smile. And Kurt smiles.
Now, one of the stories from that time in that place that was my first Seattle band that I heard and got into was still in high school. I was still in high school. Was Mother Love Bone? Did you know Andrew?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's Andrew Wood of Mother Love Bone, which then became Pearl Jam. Everybody knows that. But did you know Andy well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was. He was a dear friend of mine, and the thing about Andrew is he was so charismatic. I mean, the guy, like, this guy would walk in the room, and the energy and the brightness and the joy in the room would just elevate. Like, it was so beautiful to be around Andrew. And then when Mother Love Bone played, oh my gosh, like you would just leave feeling so the vibrations of goodness. I mean, like when he says he's the love child, he literally was. I mean, like I can't even really describe it, but you know, and I mean, my gosh, we had so many high hopes for Mother Love Bone. And I mean, seriously, that album is still one of my favorites, but I mean, maybe, you know, I mean, obviously, with his passing, it didn't take off as much as it could have. But yeah, and I did their photos 3 weeks before he passed, and he loved the session, and he had left a cassette tape that he had made. You know, he had made a mixtape, and he had left it at my space, and so I was trying to get it back to him. He didn't return my calls, and I thought something's not right here. Mm-mm, no. But he had seen the photos, and he loved them, and he told me that. And then that's the thing. It's like when people come off, because he had just gotten clean. Well, not just, but he had been clean for a minute. And then when they go back to do it, they do it at the same strength. And then that's too much because he hadn't had any.
Right. The yeah.
Tragic.
Did you do a lot of cover photos for some of those albums of not just that band, but other bands? Did you do cover photos or just press photos?
Oh, I did everything. Like I have pictures on Screaming Trees. I have pictures. I did the Sub Pop single of the month for Soundgarden. You know, I have pictures on In Utero. I have, Yeah, so you never know. Like I would do a lot of promo pictures. Like I did Alice in Chains pictures for Rolling Stone New Faces. Like the first time you're ever in Rolling Stone, you start at New Faces. And I did Blind Melon for New Faces. And I did Presidents of the United States for New Faces. And it's like, you know, and then that picture of Alice in Chains in the elevator, that's the most viral photo of them. I mean, it's like, I mean, I can just tell you, they're standing in the service elevator with their Doc Martens on and their crazy-ass disheveled hair, smelling like patchouli. You have seen this photo.
I was working at KGON in Portland, Oregon, when AIC was on tour, when they came through Portland, and they came into the station, and I got to see them there, and had passes for the show that night with my station manager and I. Well, we dallied around and we didn't make it to the first band and we didn't make it to the second band. We went to see AIC. And long story short, I just found out not too long ago, because I saw a poster online, that Mookie Blaylock, which then became Pearl Jam, opened that show that night. And I was this close. I was sitting out in the parking lot waiting for AIC to come on because we didn't know who was opening that show. I didn't even see a poster. If I had seen a poster and it had, if I had seen it, it would have said, you know, it said formerly Mother Love Bone. Well, then I would have been right there front and center, but I didn't even know who was opening. It's one of those things I wish I didn't know.
Yeah. Well, and don't you know, that's fascinating because I went to the Pearl Jam's first concert, and they were, yeah, like you said, they were called Mookie Blaylock. And Jeff Ament called me 3 days before, and he's like, "Karen, I got a new band. Can you know, come on out?" And so, so then I called a couple of my other friends, because you have to remember, this is the '90s. We don't have the internet. we don't have right. Email. Like, we don't even have cell phones, right? I mean, like, when someone calls me, it goes to my office, and I have to check my answering machine. You know, so it's crazy. So there you have it. I agree with you. And I have the only photos from Pearl Jam's first concert, which I didn't know that until 20 years later. Like, I knew I shot their
the
first concert
off ramp in
Correct.
1990.
Yep.
So did you go on tour with any of these bands, or did you hang out just in Seattle?
Yeah, I did not go on tour with the bands. I mean, once the crazy thing is, you know, it's called the music business because it's the business. So once these bands started getting signed, then they're like, oh, we're, you know, we're represented in LA or New York or wherever. And so, I mean, I continue to do some of that, but my career kind of took off anyways. Like, I did Radiohead. I was the second for, you know, I did their second photo session ever taken of Radiohead. And those photos are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and is for the Creep, you know, the Pablo Honey thing. And the minute I heard Creep on the radio, I was like, I am shooting this band. And they played Rock Candy, and I went down, I took these photos, and then I went on to do, you know, I mean, I shot the Ramones, I did, you know, Duran Duran, Soul Asylum, Tori Amos, you know, Billy Idol. So, I mean, I kind of went on my own way, and then, yeah, so I kind of missed my friends, obviously, you know, for a minute.
Sure. Now, not too long ago, I think we discussed it was 2019. You released a book. Was this your first book, The Flannel Years? Was this your first collected photography book?
Absolutely. Yeah, and I self-published it. So it's The Flannel Years, a photographic tour by Karen Mason Blair. And then the foreword is by Chris Novoselic from Nirvana. And he was like one of my really best friends. And so a lot of the photos in the book were previously unreleased, like you've never seen the photos before. And so I just self-published it. I don't know. And I've sold a lot of books, which I'm super happy about. And there's 150
It's a beautiful
photos.
Collection.
Oh, thank you. And on the back, there's a picture of me and Kurt Cobain. Like, as rare as it is to have a photo of Kurt Cobain, it's even more rare to be in one. And that's the back cover right there. But yeah, so it's super fun. It, you know, it's a very quick read, a couple sentences on each of, you know, each of the photos. But I just wanted, and I just wanted people to feel what I felt. And the book is for the fans, you know. I mean, I am so sad when someone said I didn't ever hear Kurt sing, or I didn't hear Andrew sing, or, you know, whatever. I mean, I feel bad, you know. So I'm like, well, I'm going to make a book and say from my point of view, you know.
Well, they say a picture is worth 1,000 words, and I think you've got a lot of words there in those 150 photographs. You captured a moment in time, a moment in space, and a cultural phenomenon, which kind of brings me to that question. What did you think of Seattle's success when Seattle became the Mecca, the ground zero? You know, what did you think of all that when that happened to your little town?
Well, it was absolutely mind-blowing, and none of us saw it coming. But what I will tell you, what we did know, is we loved the music. Absolutely. I mean, I love Alice in Chains. I love Soundgarden. I love Nirvana and Pearl Jam and Mother Love Bone and Screaming Trees and My Sister's Machine and Grunt Truck and all of them. But what we had no idea, this is what blows my mind. We had no idea that the world was going to love this music. But I do know that the minute I heard these songs, I was like, I love that song. I love that band. And so we just kept coming back out. I mean, we were going to support you guys, you know, support them anyways, because we needed live music in Seattle. I mean, you brought up that great point, is that, you know, I drove down for when Ben, for Soundgarden, when Ben joined the band, I drove down to Portland to do their pictures. The first session of Soundgarden was at the, you know, Melody Ballroom. Okay. And so, you know, I would drive to Portland all the time, you know, and so when the whole world said, wait a minute, we love this music, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, they had written it for us, you know, because we couldn't get any live music in Seattle, you know, so right. The bands wouldn't stop here. They would go from LA to New York, and they wouldn't stop in Seattle because it wasn't worth their time, so we couldn't get live music for a very long time.
And you can pin a lot of this success, obviously, on the label, on Sub Pop, and their expansion and the work that they did by exposing these bands to the European market, and then through the Deep Six CD cassette that was out. I remember that. I think that's what we determined, that is me and my group of friends back in those days, that we were in Portland. Well, Portland's going to be next. Portland's right down the road. There, it has to be next. And you know, Portland got some teases, but never got the kind of attention because they didn't have the label, and Seattle was Sub Pop was Seattle, Seattle was Sub Pop, and they didn't go outside of Seattle. But Portland had such depth of talent that Seattle did too. Portland just didn't have the marketing machine to push them until years later. But at that time, it was all focused up north here.
Yeah. And I think Tim Kerr added a lot. I did all sorts of Portland bands. I did Everclear. I mean, they're in my book only because I love them so much. But the thing is that, and then Love on Ice, you know, and it's
they opened that show for Alice in Chains and Mookie
there
Blaylock.
You go.
They were,
yes.
They were, and I was a fan of them. I used to see them all the time.
Love them. I did all their photos. I mean, seriously. And then I got to think of, I did a ton of Portland bands. And yeah,
Sweaty Nipples.
Sweaty Nipples? Yeah. Yeah.
Hazel and Dharma Bums and on and on and on and on. So much great music out of that time and space.
Yeah. But that's what, you know, that's the phenomenon to me, because let's just say, I'm going to go back to my thing. It's called the music business. I have seen great bands not go places because they had bad business, not because of bad music or bad bands. It's because of bad business. So there's all sorts of things to be said about that. You know, what was that promoter's name from? He was everywhere from Portland, and he'd come up here and do shows all the time. That huge... that promoter, what was his,
I'm drawing a blank.
I'm going to think about it, but that guy, he'd come up here and do shows all the time, and he was very, very, very successful, and then I don't know what happened to him, but yeah, I agree with you, like, we'll never know why or why not. I mean, like, and that's why when people go, oh, did you see the grunge movement coming? And we're like, no, we were caught in a flood. We didn't see it coming, but we went with the flow, like fast and hard, like just ride this. I mean, it was insanity. I never sat down for 10 years. I mean, I went out every night, which is why I'm so
when a scene becomes and when a scene becomes labeled, once they put a name on it and becomes labeled, that's kind of the beginning of the end in a lot of ways. Once the whole world gets a piece of it, then it starts to artificially inflated. Well, it's going to blow up and then deflate, you know. And Seattle had a good run, obviously, and then they moved on to another city. All the labels moved on to, I don't know, wherever they went next for the next scene.
Yeah,
it wasn't Portland, that's for sure.
Yeah, but what's weird about that is that all the bands went on tour, right? So we didn't, and so we missed everybody for a long time because they were all in different cities and countries and all that. But what's crazy is, like, you have to remember this is the 90s, right? And so we have Sir Mix-a-Lot singing "I Got Big Butts and I Cannot Lie," and he's winning a Grammy. And then we have Queensryche winning a Grammy for "Silent Lucidity," right? And then we have, oh, let's sign the President of the United States of America, not grunge either. None of those three bands are grunge. And then we have Candlebox blowing up. And you're just like, what is going on? So the trajectory sent all those grunge bands into their, you know, stratosphere, right? We still had all this great music coming out of Seattle at the exact same time. And we had Metal Church. I mean, like, you were just like bonkers. You're just like, what is all this great music? And any of those bands I just said, I mean, they're all great. And none of them are grunge.
Right. Metal Church. Yeah, there's one I haven't heard in a long time. Yeah, we used to joke that this must be something in the water or in the beer. There's something in the beer up there that seems to turn out talent.
Well, let's all give a nod to Jimi Hendrix, man. I mean, set us right, you know. And I've been doing photos.
Kind of planted the seed, so to speak, and launched 1,000 right there.
Well, and his music's in our trees and in our water and in our clouds and everything. And, you know, I just got done doing photos for A'Ron Jones, who's blowing up the charts right now. And I mean, you should never say he's the next Jimi Hendrix, because that's an unbearable burden. But this guy is that great on guitar. And he is, he's opening for Rolling Stones next week. I mean, nuts. So there you have it. And he even says he grew up in the same neighborhood as Jimmy. And he said, you know, Jimmy, you know, influenced him and gave him these songs, you know. So there you have it. I mean, Jimi Hendrix. I mean, can we imagine if he would have hung around a little longer, you know, what Seattle would have given you? Yeah.
Right. Karen, thank you so much for being with me. Tell me a little bit about what you're working on now.
Yeah, well, I got this Gibson thing coming out. Gibson video. I have my own episode, Gibson guitar, and it'll come out in January. And then I'm just gonna, you know, ride the holidays and, you know, sell some books. And I got some new. Believe me, I got a lot of unreleased photos coming. So follow me on whatever media you love. I mean, whether it's, you know, Instagram, Twitter, whatever. And then I'm releasing some NFTs. It's a new thing, and I'm just getting into it, but they're going to be fun. And I got a lot of great images I can't wait to share with you guys, and you've never seen them before. And I mean, I'm going to do a lot on Chris Cornell, but that took me a minute. I mean, I have to launch that without crying, but I'm getting there. And so those are going to be beautiful. You're going to love those.
Will that be that's a dedicated Chris piece?
Yeah. Yeah.
When do you think you might see that out?
Well, I'm working on it now. And like I said, it just took me a long time to be able to look at the images, but he gave me, I mean, like, now I look back and, you know, I have this picture of him, you know, doing the Jesus Christ pose in my window at my studio. And I was doing a whole band shoot, and he just gets up in my window, stands in the window, and does the Jesus Christ pose. And I didn't even know there was a song called Jesus Christ Pose. And I was like, okay, Chris. And I take three frames. I was like, click, click, click. That's it. And then he gets out of the window. And so, I can't wait to show you other things that he gave me that I didn't know until now.
I really do appreciate your time this evening, Karen. Looking forward to maybe meeting you sometime, maybe in Seattle, maybe in Portland someday. And looking forward to seeing all of your future endeavors and the work that you release. I'll be following you. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thanks for having me, dude. I love it. Thanks for doing this and speaking, you know, interviewing artists. I mean, and yeah, we got to meet. Let's get together. Sounds great. And thanks for having me.
You bet. Past episodes of Times Like Now can be heard wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you to the letter J, Cody Robertson, for original music. I can be reached, Trevor, at timeslikenow.com. And as I'm nearing my one-year anniversary, I would love to hear what you think of the show. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to speaking with you all next time.
Hello out there, this is Jello Biafra. If you're tired of the OCA, Walt Disney, Westinghouse, General Electric, and police departments telling you what you should listen to, stay tuned in to KBOO Portland, listener-sponsored, non-commercial community radio, 90.7 on your FM dial, unless your FM was made in America.
Andy Warhol looks a scream.
My name is Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Azure Atto. She runs Gallery Go-Go on the second floor of Pioneer Place Mall above Gucci. Gallery Go-Go is open now for the holiday season with a new exhibition of prints and original art by local artists. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus in person, Asia.
Thank you for visiting. I'm excited to give you a tour.
We're in the mall.